I know I've said in the past that we shouldn't apologize for things, especially for things that don't require an actual apology. So I won't. But instead, I want to let you in on a little something. I know there's a large group of you that listen to this weekly, and I'm sure because some of you have reached out, weeks have been getting skipped. And truth be told, once again, I find my life in flux, and I'm navigating what that looks like for me. Especially with how far I've come in my growth and self-development from my recovery, and most importantly, from this podcast. My approach to the hurdle that we call life is far different than it was a year ago. However, it does not stop life from coming at us, nor does it stop us from needing to remember who we are at our core, what makes us tick, and remember our own value. Because life, it'll convince you of things that are not true. Things that'll make you believe other than. So all I ask of you is for you to keep making the hard decisions. Don't let life make them for you. Because when you let life get you out of character and start making decisions instead of you making them for yourself, you'll find that you become something you just don't recognize. My name is Jason Farias, and this is my Madness Method. When I say the word untouchable, what comes to mind for you? You see, you can watch all the TV and all the movies you want, right? And all these guys that are portrayed as untouchable, you know, any mobster movie, any drug dealer, any famous artist, for that matter, any government official, right? They're untouchable. But you know what I see is somebody that's just insulated. Okay. It's not that they're untouchable, they've just surrounded themselves by so many layers, anybody trying to get at them would have to go through that they give the appearance of being untouchable. Anybody is touchable. But when you imagine the final scene in Scarface, right? And the guys are coming for Tony Montana and he's up in his room with his gun and his pile of coke. How many people got killed before anybody got to him? See, he wasn't untouchable. He was insulated. Look at our president. It's not that he's untouchable, but he's insulated by Secret Service and military and police, and then just simply by the crowds that are surrounded by it. The same thing goes for any rap or pop star. It's the same shit. They're surrounded by an entourage. And the reality is that 90% of those people ain't even their fucking friends. Right? Those are just the hangers-on that want to be part and want to be down with it, right? And the artist or the politician or the drug lord, right? They allow this. You get in the way of somebody getting to me. That's a scary mindset for somebody to get into because they have convinced themselves that they're untouchable when in fact they very much can be reached. There's just some layers you got to get through. There's some hurdles that exist. Okay. But the problem still exists that somebody is viewing themselves as untouchable. And when they begin to behave accordingly, you got a real fucking problem on your hands. After the conversation I had with the cops that were at Harbor Island, they were there for me, strictly for me. That was what was shared to me. I began to feel as though I was untouchable. I've knocked out a dude because he wanted to try to pull his gun, right? And everybody praised that shit. And then I got duck that went right behind me to reinforce that and push that home. And then that dude just kind of disappeared. And the fact that I had a connection to a family member with one of these cops that was sent to put me to an end, at least my activities, you know, I really started getting this cushion around me that was one by the people that wanted to be around Jay, right? Because the word was getting out that this guy might be untouchable. Now, those are my words. I'm not saying anybody ever said that to me. I never heard anybody say it, but I watched it. I watched it happen. You know, in order for somebody to come talk to me, people would have to come like, hey, are you cool if this person comes through? Like now I'm on a completely different side of town from Harbor Island. I'm not even on my side of town, but now I'm having people check in with me about who can be in the area and who can't. And that's a bizarre feeling. And instead of evaluating, like, oh shit, like, what have I gotten myself into? You start getting these visions of grandeur. That's right, motherfucker, I'm untouchable. But it's all subconscious. At least it was for me. Okay, because that was never who I was. Like, I was always about being with people, partying with people, meeting new people. Like, that was my thing. But for some reason, people felt as though I was to be insulated. And it just sort of became a bubble that happened around me. And that's a frightening state of mind. So, KK and I were hanging out. It was another one of them nights, just hanging around the apartment complex. Duck's wife had actually wound up moving out. They had a falling out. As much as I encouraged him to leave me alone and leave the drugs alone, like adults make their own decisions. And he made decisions for himself that ultimately led to the demise of his relationship with his wife. And I'll be honest with you, I do carry a lot of responsibility for that. If I ever run into him one day, I really am going to have to apologize for not being better or at least more forceful. I mean, what was I going to do? This guy towered over me. Like, honestly, if he really wanted to, he could have shut me the fuck up real easy. But we were all hanging outside the apartments. It was late. I met this new guy, Abel. You guys would be amazed. Okay. This apartment complex that Duck lived in. I mean, I wound up meeting the manager of the complex that did dope. This kid, Abel, lived in the other side of the same building as Duck. He did dope. There was Peter and Mary. Yes, I know. I swear I fucked with them too, but those were their names. Peter and Mary, the one building over, they had five fucking kids. Both of them were dope fiends. And it didn't really matter who I met or what I said. Adults are going to make decisions for themselves. And I encouraged all of these kids. See, Abel was probably a few years younger than me and seemed like he was just like trying to be down and trying to like be with what everybody else was doing. And I would tell him, like, yo, man, you got to leave this shit alone, bro, before it just takes you over. And Peter and Mary had five kids in a two-bedroom apartment. Five kids, y'all. And I was like, yo, y'all can't be fucking with this shit. And they blew, mind your fucking business, whatever. I mean, that's not how they said it, but that's what was being said. But anyway, so we're all hanging out outside. I'm meeting all these new people. Like, everybody's really excited to meet me for some reason, which face value, I was loving, right? All the attention I've been looking for all the wrong reasons. But it was getting a little hot, okay? And Duck and KK had a little sidebar. And I remember watching them, and they were kind of standing over, like, in the parking stalls. They weren't, like, hanging out in front of whichever, whomever's apartment we were standing in front of at the moment. And KK comes over. He's like, Jay, why don't we take a ride? There's too much happening here. And I was like, man, fuck it. Like, I'm down to go wherever. Let's do whatever. And he goes, I got a spot. And I was like, yeah, let's go. And Duck was like, I'll take care of things here. And so KK and I get in the car. Sammy's car, fucking car's destroyed. We take a ride and we hit Rainbow Boulevard. And on Rainbow Boulevard in Vegas, there was what I come to learn was like more frequented by the Asian community. So anyway, so we're in this area and it's all Filipino, Chinese ran establishments. And we go and we walk in and it's late. It's probably 10, 11 o'clock. And I'm like, oh shit, how long we got? He goes, nah, man, this place is over 24 hours. 24 hours. He goes, yeah, man, wait till you see this shit. And we go in and it's a pool hall. Now you couldn't really tell. I'll be honest with you guys, I couldn't tell from the fucking writing on the wall. But it was a pool hall, a 24-hour pool hall, and it was absolutely packed with Asians. And then there was me. And it was almost like that record scratch screech. And everybody kind of looked, and KK would just started, hey, what's up, y'all? Blah, blah, blah. This is my boy Jay, blah, blah, blah. We're gonna get a room. I was like, a room? He goes, yeah. So there's these private rooms in this pool hall, right? So you come in and there's, two, four, six, eight, I don't know, there was like 14 pool tables, but then all to the left were these glass windowed private rooms. And in these private rooms, there was couches, a pool table, a big screen TV with game systems hooked up. And so we set up shop in one of these private billiard rooms. We would close the blinds. And KK just starts fucking smoking dope. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, he's like, nah, it's cool. Everybody here does it. It's all good. And I was like, fuck, dude. Are you kidding me? Like, I can see who comes and goes. You know, I'm seeing this as insulation. We're chilling in this pool hall and hours go by. And I was like, yo, bro, like, we just left Cindy, like, hanging out. She was chilling with the apartment managers. There's this two lesbian couple. We'll get into them later. But they were all hanging out. I was like, we got to go get her, dude. Like, I'm not just gonna leave her sitting there while we chill here and have this great time. So, ran over, picked her up, came back. And by the time I came back, Sammy was in the room, and there was this new guy, and he was this kind of chubby dude. Now, mind you, it had probably been like 2 in the morning by this time, and like he was in a collared shirt and some khakis. I was like, you're standing out like a sore thumb, bro. And he was just smoking and smoking and smoking. And I was like, holy shit. Like, he didn't fit the mold. He was sort of this portly Filipino looking guy with a collared shirt and it tucked into his khakis and some work looking shoes on. And I mean, he's just getting high as fuck. And KK's like, oh yeah, this is my boy JP. And I was like, oh, what's up, JP? What's going on? And we hung out, got high, played some video games, played some pool. Cindy was nice and calm, which I was happy for because I could always see when we went places that she was always feeling like she had to be on edge. And I hated that for her. I really spent a lot of time paying attention to how she was feeling, and I hated that most of the places we went, she was uneasy. And for the first time I saw her, not the first time, but the first time in a while, I saw her relaxed and laughing and not looking around the room, seeing who's up to what and whatever. And, you know, just in conversation, I decided because I seem to fuck with everybody. I was fucking with JP about, hey, bro, so why are you all dressed up fuck 2 in the morning? And KK fucking giggles. He goes, yo, tell him. And JP's like, oh, I repair ATM machines all over Vegas, and I have to do it at night when they're not busy. And I was like, what? And you know, in hindsight, I think about that, and what a come up hustle that could have been, right? Like, what kind of scam could we have pulled off with that? But I was like proud of the guy, right? Like, there was a part of like, oh shit, you can get high and fucking still hold down a cool ass job like that. And you know, we got to talking, and he was telling me he lives way out on the west side, and he's got a wife and a kid, and his wife don't know nothing about his drug use. So he just stops in there kind of on a nightly basis at the same place. And for the most part, KK is usually there, which sort of tells me where KK's been dipping off to in the middle of the night, which kind of eased my mind about some questions I may have had. So he tells me about his house. He owns his home, and he's this job and all that. And I was like, man, that's good for you, dude. Like, I was really proud of him. But never mind the fact he's smoking more dope than everybody else. Like, he was getting to it. And, you know, he was getting high enough to carry him through the rest of his night. But not once did it cross my mind to hit this guy up, like, hey, let's fucking pull a scam or whatever. I don't know. I guess I just wasn't interested in doing anything more than I had going on at the moment. We hit it off pretty well. It was nice to meet somebody new that was sort of regular, like had a life outside of what I was experiencing, right? Because at the end of the night, when this guy's done with his route repairing whatever machines he had to repair, he went home and lived a normal life. And I was really envious of that. I remember thinking back about how much I was envious of that. And so I called good enough and just kind of let it slide, and we hung out. That was a good night. We were there till like 6, 7 in the morning. Cindy and I go back, and we wind up going back to Harbor Island. KK drops us off. But before we all parted ways, he was like, hey, JP asked if he could have your number. And I was like, yeah, of course he can. He goes, yeah, I know. I already gave it to him. I was like, well, the fuck you asking me for? If you already did it, you could have just said, hey, bro, I gave dude your number. And I was like, it's all good. Thanks for at least trying to ask. And then life just sort of went business as usual. But it wasn't but 24 hours later that JP hit me up, and he was like, hey man, do you mind if I just grab some from you? Like, I kind of he was went into this whole explanation of being at this pool hall. He gets hung up there, right? Because the problem when you smoke meth is you lose all track of time, right? One, you're super high and you're going hella fast, and you're not noticing that an hour went by real fast. So you're certainly not noticing that 3 went by real fast. And it was starting to sort of show in his work and whatnot. And I was like, yo, let me touch base with KK real quick and make sure that he's okay with that. Like, I don't want to make any decisions. Like, I know you through him, and I know that the channels were right. And you gave, asked if you could have my number, and we went through this whole thing, but I got to check with him. And so I re just right quick, I called KK. He was like, yeah, man, I don't give a fuck, dude. It's all good. He's like, I wouldn't have fucking hooked up the number if that wasn't the case. I say, hey, just out of respect, I don't want to step on any toes, so on. So JP and I started doing a little business together on a nightly basis. And this guy wasn't no joke. Like, he was buying, like, I'd see him some nights 2, 3 times, and he'd buy up, an 8 ball to a quarter ounce at a shot. And I'm like, bro, where's this going? He's like, oh, when I stop here and I stop there. And he was sort of like me. He liked to go places all over town throughout the night and just get people high. And I was like, yo, I totally feel that, dude. Like, it's like a cool vibe. And I did remind him, I was like, you realize that's counterproductive to what we're doing here, right? You wanted my number so you didn't get hung up at the pool hall, but now you're hooking up with me and going getting hung up at other places. Like, he's like, yeah, I know. Well, anyway, so like a week or so this goes by, and we find ourselves again at the pool hall. Now, that this became the spot. Again, most of the night started hanging out in the parking lot at the apartments, and once it got a little too active, we'd make our way over to the pool hall. Sometimes Duck was with us. Actually, a lot of times Duck was with us because his wife wasn't there anymore. He and I were real close. Sometimes Killa would be with us, not very often. That guy kind of just roamed on the fringes of the group. He had his own game going on. But anyway, we would all wind up there, and I was sharing with JP that, I haven't been home in a while. I haven't seen family. Cindy hasn't seen her family. It would be nice to go home. And JP's like, fucking go home. And I was like, well, there's a couple problems with that, dude. Like, being gone for any amount of time, it's supply and demand, right? If I'm not there to make the connections, then people will find somebody to supply them with their dope. Now, will it be as good as mine? Maybe. I can't be the only person with access to it. And I can't roll the dice on whether or not somebody will or won't find a suitable connect for as a replacement to me. And he's like, yeah, I guess I never thought about that. And I said, and the other problem, I don't have a fucking car, bro. And he was like, oh, he's like, rent one. And I was like, come on, man, I'm a cash only kind of dude. Like, that's not how you rent cars. And he was like, man, don't even trip off that, bro. I'll rent you a car. And I was like, what? Like, without, like, the dude didn't hesitate. He didn't pause. He was like, I'll rent you a car. I was like, seriously? He goes, yeah, fuck, no problem. How long do you want to go home? And I was like a week. And he's like, wait, where's home? And I was like, you should have led with that, fucker. So I was explaining to him, whereabouts. I didn't really want to get into detail exactly where, but I went, NorCal. I'd like to go home and see family. And he was like, yeah, I got it, bro. He's like, you want to go tomorrow? Of course, Cindy was with me. We were at the pool hall, and I was like, you want to go home? She's like, yeah, let's go home. And I was like, all right, let me work through some scenarios in my head. And very quickly, I was like, all right, here's the thing. I know my backpack boys go through this much in a night. I know that Duck can manage some things at one point. I can leave KK with this certain amount. And then what I don't have to do is provide them any contact information to my hookup. And once you start handing over hookups, it's fucking over. I spent a 24-hour span. We didn't leave the next day. We left the day following. The 24 hours following JP saying he'd rent us the car was spent, all right, Duck, here's your shit. Backpack boys, here's your shit. I went over to Harbor Island, said hi to the, hey, what's up, fucking coppers? Y'all still roaming around here? And fuck, I paid a couple weeks' rent as I usually would on my spot. And we rounded up our shit. And truth be told, we didn't have a lot. Okay. I mean, we were there with a couple duffel bags worth of shit. So we really packed up everything we had. And we grabbed our, well, we went and got the car and came back, got our bags, got the cats. And JP was like, hey man, you think you could shoot me some dope for the hookup? And I was like, bro, I got you better than that. And I shot him I don't know. I probably gave him an ounce or so. It was probably, it definitely wasn't dollar for dollar. He definitely made out. But the fact that he was willing to do that and allow me the opportunity to go home. Now, mind you, he rented the car in his name, with his license, with his credit card, and then handed me the keys. Okay. And it was, I remember feeling excited, like, oh, yeah, going home and with an ungodly amount of dope, right? Because I didn't know if I was going to be able to get any while I was home. But nonetheless, it was getting to go home. It had been 6, 8 months. Shit, guys, maybe even more. I'll be honest with you. Like I just said, man, meth fucks up your ability to tell time. And then the other sad part of this, as I sit here and I tell you this story, I remember nothing of that trip home. Of all the detail, of all the names, of all the activities, of the weights, I remember nothing of this trip home. I don't remember whose house we went to. I don't remember seeing my mom, my grandmother. I don't remember if Cindy saw her parents. I mean, I know we did, but I remember none of it. You see, Vegas was an in the moment, now self-induced and like self-loathing party, a never-ending party to boot. And it was full-blown excitement and full-blown activity, but it was going home, and my guess would be the shame of what it must felt like to be home. There's no way my family didn't know how fucked up we were. There's no way. At the time, I'm sure I thought I was pulling it off. I'm sure of it. But looking back, there's no way that people didn't know exactly how strung out I was. That's a tough pill to swallow, because my mom had me when she was very young and we grew up together. I'm sorry that she saw me that way, but my mom and I have a bit of a different type of relationship. But the fact that my grandmother sat with whatever that must have looked like, it breaks my heart. My mama saw it, but my grandmother seeing that breaks my heart. And you know, maybe that's why I blocked it out, is because of whatever shame or guilt any of my family had on their face. The first thing I remember about coming back to Vegas, well, let me back up a little bit. Here's the thing. We were supposed to be gone a week. Dude paid for a week. Well, 2 weeks later, we came back to Vegas. And the dude would call me, blow me up, text me. I didn't answer. I figured, fuck him, dude. Fucking, you know what I mean? He's good. I paid him with dope. Like, shut the fuck up. But unbeknownst to me, his wife found out he did this, fucking found out he's on drugs. Like, all this fucking melee happened while we were gone because I stayed gone longer and the rental company started calling the house and all this shit. And I really put this dude in a bad spot. But fuck, what did I care, right? I just throw some dope at it. It'll be fine, man. Fucking meth is currency to me. Shit. You need some more? I got some more. Fucking shut your bitch up, bro. That was the mindset I had. Fuck you. I could have called him, been like, hey, bro, one more week, let him know. No, I didn't do that. But the night we drove back to Vegas, I clearly recall being way out, and the sun was beginning to set, and we were still way out in the desert. And if you remember in one of the previous episodes, I talked about the excitement that I would get as you're coming back to Vegas, because way off in the distance, you knew that that glow was Vegas. And we were way out. But this time, there were chemtrails, okay, from the back of planes, right? Now, whether you believe that these are planes dumping chemicals or if it's really just water vapor, whatever you believe, I'm just going to share with you what I saw. The sky was so full of these chemtrails, it looked like a basket had been woven. I'd honestly never before nor since seen this many chemtrails in any one area. It was very bizarre. And I even remember pointing it out to Cindy. I'm like, hey, are you seeing this or am I tripping? She was like, no. And we're like, instead of, and mind you, we're high, so fucking we're not watching the road, probably doing 100 miles an hour, staring up in the sky for God knows how long. Conveniently, we stayed on the road, but by the time we got into Vegas, there was this blanket of green. You know, when spring hits and all the pollen kicks off of everything and your car has that green fuzz to it if you're in a real bad area, but it gets the pollen on your car. Well, it was like that, except for you couldn't see further than, if I had to guess, 50 yards. Okay, you could see the glow from headlights, but you couldn't see a building. And it wasn't part of Vegas. It was all of Vegas. It was so thick that people were having to stop and get out and wipe their windshields off. And I, you know what, you could probably Google this. I don't really know how to what the exact words you could use, but I'm telling you, it was the craziest shit I've ever seen. Like when we got to Harbor Island, and I mean, when you were approaching town, you had to slow the fuck down because you couldn't see. My immediate assumption was whatever these chemtrails were floated all the way down. When we got back to Harbor Island, I could usually see from my apartment across the pool area to the building across the way. There was no seeing that building. You could see the porch lights. That's it, not the building. So there was no going outside when we got home. It was super bizarre. That's the first memory I have after JP getting me that Sebring that he rented us after heading home. First thing I remember after that is this event in Vegas. And so Cindy and I just stayed locked up. You know what's fucked up? I didn't even call JP, like, hey, man, I'm back in town. My bad. I was like, fuck him. I'll call him tomorrow. I'm not driving this thing anywhere. I really should have called that dude because what triggered from that was a bunch of people putting in their fucking 2 cents, people feeling some type of way. Now, when I say that, even the next day, everything's still green. People can't see, but it wasn't as bad as it was the night before. So I just drove over to JP's house. Didn't call him, didn't warn him, nothing. I just went over there. And I had known, he'd always told me that before he goes to work in the late afternoon, he'd always be in his garage, either getting high or getting ready for work. So I tapped on his garage and he opened it up. And man, this dude was pissed. But it was like hard to take him serious. Okay. Because again, he was this professional guy, you know, little overweight, fucking in his little polo shirt and shit, like trying to be mad, but he was kind of soft spoken and he was wanting to be mad. But he winds up going on a rant about how fucked up it was. And I was apologizing to him. But of course, as I'm apologizing to him, I'm loading his pipe and leaving him a bag, thinking this is going to shut him the fuck up. But he keeps mentioning fucking Tommy told me blah 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 blah. I'm like, Tom, hold on. And I'm like as he's bobbing his head back and forth, feel, you know, getting in his emotions, I'm like bobbing my head back and forth with him, like trying to make eye contact. Like, who the fuck is Tommy? Like, I've never heard you talk about this. And I didn't ask that because the best thing about getting information out of people is if you just fucking let them talk, they'll never shut up. I'm making a whole podcast from it. You know what I mean? So I just let this dude talk. I kept hearing, well, yeah, fucking, and I ran out of the dope and I had to get my shit from Tommy. And I'm like, there it is. That's it right there. I was like, so JP had to go to somebody else to get his dope, told this dude about the situation he was in. And then this dude fucking got in his ear talking shit, trying to shut me down. Right. And I'm like, man, what? In my head, and I'm just letting JP fucking go off because in all reality, I deserved all the yelling. I mean, he probably should have tried to whoop my ass. I just was trying to be apologetic and listen to what he was saying, but I was starting to figure out that I got somebody that's out there talking shit on me. And if they didn't know me before, they know about me now. And to me, that was a problem because, like we've talked about, like people feel slighted. Where's this dude from? And see, here's the thing, the whole checking in thing. Like I mentioned a little earlier that like people would come to me, hey, is this cool if so and so does something, whatever. Like I was really never about that, but that's not how everybody operates. Like some people are insistent that if you're in their side of town, you got to check in with them. I dare you to go to fucking Atlanta and not have to figure out who to check in with if you think you're gonna show up with some fucking dope, dude. You get shot. That's not how go into fucking Brooklyn, Yonkers. Fuck, go think you don't go have to check in with somebody? Nah, man. And it's not for them to come find you. Better not let them find you. You need to go find them. Hey, I'm in town. This is what's going on, and so on, dude. There are fucking gatekeepers. And whether they really are or not, some fancy themselves that way. And I don't know who the fuck this guy Tommy is. So now my wheels are just fucking spinning all the while I'm trying to keep it cool, like I don't give a fuck, you know, but then something comes out of fucking JP's mouth. And was City standing right there, yo? You know what? Fucking Abel says that he fucked your girl, blah blah blah. I said, ooh. Like here I am, like trying to be again, trying to be apologetic and trying to be understanding. And now this dude wants to start talking shit and just throwing names out. Now, this kid Abel, I just met this dude. We hung around a few times. I wasn't familiar with dude like that. But now JP's just trying to get me fired up, and now I'm getting fucking pissed off. I didn't respond to that. I wanted to come back to that. And I was like, so your boy Tommy's fucking all up in your ear and whatever. I was like, I hope his dope is good. I like tried to be super diplomatic about it. And he was like, man, that fucking guy let me borrow his truck. You know what it's like driving around in a fucking big ass lowered Chevy? And I was like, nope, but that's helpful info. I was like, lowered Chevy, huh? I was like, don't tell me is it fucking some bright red? He's like, no, it's actually really nice. He's got it lowered, really like the mood changed. And he started talking about this dude's truck and oh, it's an extra cab and fuck had this nice ass system and it's blue inside and out. And I was like, check, done. So now I know the vehicle I'm looking for. Or at least the one to keep an eye out for. So now I can circle back to Abel. And he's like, yeah, fucking Abel was hanging out over at the fucking apartments and was, you know, you weren't around. He was like, yeah, fuck this girl, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you sure he said that? Like joking, making light of it. So he'd keep talking. And yeah, he's just went into the whole story about how Abel was fucking, yeah, man, there's been da, da, da. And he went into details that I'm not going to go into. And then there was one more. One more that now that fucking, because again, like I said, I was loading this dude's pipe as he's ranting and raving. So I'm getting him high off the good shit he's been missing. And he starts talking about Danny Boy. Old Danny Boy. Danny Boy's been missing. Danny Boy's been missing in action ever since. And that there's some talk going around that he's a CI, a confidential informant for the cops. And so I see his mood is changing now, right? So he's got his rant out. He was able to talk some shit. And now he's kind of bringing me up to speed on some things that went on while I was gone because he's getting it off his chest. Now I'm getting him a little high. He's feeling better. The car's back. The situation is at least over for him so he can relax. And he starts sharing with me that Danny Boy is being called a fucking a snitch, basically. And you know what? In hindsight, that makes perfect sense because to me, remember, like I was saying, why did it take me to whoop this dude's ass, right? And I don't know if maybe everybody thought I was in on it or knew about it, that this is who this guy was. Like, well, people didn't fuck with this guy because they either knew, had heard, or didn't want anything to do with anybody with that association. So here I'd done whoop this guy's ass, and now he hasn't been seen from since. And people are calling him an informant. That could be bad. But nonetheless, we finished getting high. I actually did throw JP some cash and left him some, like, yeah, what else am I going to do? You know, I can't fix it, dude. I fucked up. What I'm not going to do is apologize. Yeah, I was apologetic. I did not apologize because fucking, it's what you get fucking trading dope for fucking putting yourself out there. I'm sure he wasn't all too pleased about the fact that I was like, oh yeah, hey, by the way, you got to take us back. So now we got to get in this fucking car and take us back. And I had him drop us off over at Duck's apartment because I had a little something I had to handle. Duck was super excited. I wish you guys could have seen this guy, man. Just the biggest, kind of burliest, meanest looking dude you could think of. And he just comes like hopping over to me, arms all out, and just gives me the biggest bear hug. And of course, he picks me up because he's got me by a foot of height. And he's just swinging me, Jay! And he's just super happy to see me. And it was cool. So that felt good. You know what I mean? Like, and he just kind of ran me down. Oh, hey, here's some money, blah, blah, blah. You know, the backpack boys checked in, this and that. He kind of ran me down on how everything went while I was gone. And then we just proceeded to start getting fucked up and partying because I was back. And then that day slowly crept into night. And I was sitting outside, sort of by Duck's apartment, maybe adjacent to it, but it was a little closer to where the side that Abel lived on. And I just sat there and everybody's like having a good time and sort of business as usual, right? It was fucking rinse and repeat with these hangout sessions. But this night I was waiting for Abel. It felt like I waited on this little fuck for eternity. Because I did tell him, hey, call Abel, tell him I'm back, blah, 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 like everything's cool. And they called him and he showed up and this fire lit at the bottom of my rib cage. And I can kind of feel it doing it right now. But this fire lit and it like made me short of breath. And it felt like my head got bright red. And as he came up and this motherfucker was going to put his hand out. Now, mind you, my problem resolving was usually like, hey, I'm going to try to see things from the other person's point of view. I'm going to let this person try to explain themselves. But remember, I have this one, I have this personality disorder where this guy, Hefe, or whomever you want to call him, he tends to take over. But then there's this layer of protection that makes me feel untouchable. It's this insulation. As Abel approached, he was like, put his right hand way up in the air, like he wanted to dab me up. Like, and I 300 kicked this dude. And for those of you that haven't watched the movie 300, there's a scene in there where the guy gets kicked in the chest. Like, he just straight kicks him into a pit. And that's what I did to Abel. Abel and I were about the same height. I probably had him by 10 or 15 pounds at most. But I kicked this dude with every fucking fiber in my body and every ounce of anger that existed. And this dude, I swear to God, okay, this guy flew out of his, he had slide-ons. He had like those Nike slides, and he fucking popped right out of those up onto the hood of a car. And I just remember the noise he made because I don't know how I got my leg that fucking high, but I kicked this dude like my toes kind of touched like the bottom of his sternum. So I know that shit didn't feel good. But he launched up onto the hood of the car, and there was a part of me that was like, dude, stop. Stop. What are you doing? And that part of me got shut the fuck up because as this kid rolled off of the car, so he landed on his back on the hood of this car and was like rolling to his left towards the driver's side of the car. And I sort of crouched down with my right hand cocked back. And I was just measuring him up as I walked closer. And as I walked closer, and right as he was rolling off the car, I popped that dude so square in the mouth. And it was scary. The squish, the fucking, it was scary, the squish that happened. But the problem, there was so much blood. What had happened was he was rolling over, heading face down, and my fist was coming straight up. So the momentum of him rolling and my fist coming up, I split his lip all the way open, like predator mouth. Like it split all the way down to his chin. It just flapped open. And the girls that were outside go running into Duck's house. And Cindy later tells me the girls, Jay's killing Abel. Jay's killing Abel. And she's like, what the fuck? Here we go. And you know, her not being surprised by anything at this point, just kind of trotted out and was like, that's what the fuck he gets. Duck was so proud. But again, I'm just solidifying myself here as like a real piece of shit. I was about my business at this point. Right after that happened was immediate remorse. Because that's not who I am. But it was the role I was playing. And you know what? I guess I gotta stop. Okay. I guess I gotta stop saying that's not who I was. Okay. Because that's exactly who the fuck I was. Did I like it? No. Was it necessary? I mean, I guess I could have just stayed in California, right? Fuck, got my shit together. But for the scenario that I was in, this was the role I had to play. And I had the stomach for it. That's not who I wish I was. It's not who I wanted to be. It's not who I aspired to be, but it was who the fuck I was, and I was good at it. You know, I grew up with like some real fucking fighters, some motherfuckers that knocked people out on general purpose. And that was never who I was because I was always afraid I'd never be able to stop. And it turns out it wasn't incorrect of me to assume that. And it's not that I can't stop one fight, it's I can't stop the behavior from continuing. So I knew I couldn't stop, but the focus was incorrect because I can stop beating on somebody as soon as the job is done. And I sure as fuck. Okay, so you guys have heard enough of these fucking podcasts now. You know the thing Cindy and I have been through. Like, I'm not fucking doing this shit anymore. Fucking, you want to truth or no? I don't give a fuck anymore, dude. Fucking everybody's getting it. I had had enough. And I was fucking angry. And I was a fucking disappointment to myself, to what I have to believe was my family. It's got to be why I blocked out that trip to California. I know that I came back to Vegas from that trip to California a fucking monster. I was a monster. And I don't mean like, ooh, look at he's. No, I mean, I had problems. It was the beginning of my acceptance of dying an addict. And I wasn't gonna go out like a fucking punk. And that is a scary fucking place to be. These are a lot, these memories, man, they're a lot to get through, but I gotta share them with you. I have to share them with you. It's the story. It's the story of who I am today. It's the story of why I care. And it's the story of why I want to help and do better and be better, because deep down, I am a good person. They got caught up in a whole bunch of badass decisions. And I just know that there's somebody out there that's going through the same shit that just needs to hear that it doesn't matter how you perceive yourself, you can get better. So until the next time, please reach out. MyMadnessMethod819@gmail. MyMadnessMethod on Instagram. I promise I'll reply. Until the next time, my name is Jason Farias, and this is My Madness Method.